On Last Word this week, Victoria Wood by the young comedian she inspired, Ray Fitzwalter, who edited the ITV current affairs programme World in Action, June Jolly, the nurse who transformed the treatment of children in hospital, and the voice of hundreds of train announcements, Phil Sayer. He explains how to decode his apologies for delays.
If I say I'm sorry, you've got time for a cup of tea. Yeah. If I'm very sorry, you can probably just about get the English breakfast down you. If I'm extremely sorry, turn around, go home. That's how it works.
More from Phil Sayer later. But first... Prince Rogers Nelson from Minneapolis, Minnesota, became Prince Rock Superstar. Prince sold 100 million albums. He was musically versatile in the studio and a dramatic showman on stage. He always enjoyed playing intimate gigs as well as stadia. At the height of his fame in 1993, he played for an invited audience of a couple of hundred people, including me, in the BBC Radio Theatre in the heart of Broadcasting House, a gig that was broadcast on Radio 1's Simon Bates show.
Don't worry, I won't hurt you.
The producer was Fergus Dudley.
Well, we got a phone call just saying that Prince was in London and wanted to do a gig for the BBC. This was on a Friday night, and the gig turned out to be the following Monday morning.
In the BBC Radio Theatre, not a large venue.
No, it was a very small and intimate gig, and I mean, we know from recent gigs that Prince did when he turned up in London. He likes doing that kind of stuff, but this may have set the model for that.
Did you get to talk to him when he came to play the Radio Theatre?
Not directly. We were sort of under instruction that anything that we needed to do with him would have to go through his minders. And there was quite an amusing moment where just before he was about to go on stage and we needed to make sure he was ready, I actually had to look at his minder, ask his minder if he was ready. His minder asked Prince, and Prince said, yes, bear in mind, I'm standing right next to the man at the time. Are you ready? It was an interesting and loud gig. We had complaints from Radio 3 at the time because the levels were so high. It was interrupting Radio 3's broadcast, and apparently the last time that happened was when Jimi Hendrix played there.
Can you remember what he played?
He definitely played 1999. The atmosphere was electric. I mean, you know, for being in front of such an amazing artist, and I've seen him at several concerts, and then seen him play as long at the after show as he played actually at the concert, which people were paying for, and to have him in such a room, it was an electric gig.
That's Prince playing live here at Broadcasting House in London in 1993. I'm joined by the music broadcaster and writer Paul Gambaccini. I think, Paul, you saw him some years earlier when he played his first ever British gig.
1981 at the Lyceum, when the Lyceum was still a dance hall. Now, of course, the Lion King is playing there. And I went with Bob Geldof and Paula Yates and their friend Chris Hill. And Prince was promoting his new album, Controversy. And the place was only half full because he hadn't had a hit in Britain yet. And the sight of Bob Geldof and I dancing has never been a pleasant one, but I have to say we were fully into it.
It's interesting the style of his music because it seems to bring together rock music and soul and funk and meld them into one thing.
Well, you've hit it spot on because Prince himself said most people that are his friends are interested in one kind of music, but that's not enough for him. So he liked James Brown and George Clinton, but he also loved Fleetwood Mac. So he was after the tunefulness as well as the funk and the instrumentation and melody.
And in the studio, he often played many of the instruments himself, didn't he?
Oh, yes. His very first album, For You, he is just him. He's playing everything. And this, of course, is almost in the vein of Paul McCartney, who's famous for telling his drummers how to play the drums. But Prince really did operate a band like James Brown. He picked them. He basically looked over their shoulder, made sure they were doing what he wanted them to do.
And he had all these female muses, didn't he? Sometimes they were his lovers, sometimes not. But he used to pick out female singers and female musicians and work closely with them.
Yes, one of them, Vanity, has recently passed away, which caused him sadness. This was part of the visual presentation of Prince, because Prince himself was a short person. Quite amusing for someone who loves basketball, as he did, and he played it in school. But he would surround himself either with these huge male bouncers or these very attractive females. And when he won the Oscar for Best Original Sound Score, a song score for Purple Rain, he was accompanied to the podium by Wendy and Lisa of The Revolution, Prince and The Revolution. So there they are on either side of him, and he's in the middle, shorter, and making a speech in a very small voice because he was a shy speaker.
And was that the reason why he rarely gave interviews, do you think?
I think that's definitely one reason. I think he also didn't want to be grilled on his private life. But he also, frankly, doesn't seem to have been a great interviewee, because in the last years of his life, he did give some interviews, which are available on YouTube, and you actually think, you know what? Stick to the music. I mean, with all due respect.
Let's talk a little bit about the eccentricities, because there was a time in the 90s when he wrote Slave on his cheek and he gave up his name and wanted to be known as a symbol. It was all about a dispute with his record company, wasn't it?
Well, yes, because Prince was the most productive artist of the 80s. The artists of the 60s had one or two albums a year, but record companies had discouraged artists from having that much output. And Prince just wanted to keep putting out records. And he had 39 studio albums in all. And he was having hit after hit after hit after hit. There was almost no time when there wasn't a Prince song on the radio. And Warner Brothers wanted him to put out fewer records. Can you imagine that? even in the last 2 years of his life, he put out 4 albums. So he wanted to get out of that contract, and he wanted ownership of his masters. And so this is why the whole public thing, and George Michael, of course, and he inspired each other on that one. And Slave, yes, written on. And then he gave up the name Prince because he said that was associated with works that are owned by Warner Brothers. So he has to be the artist formerly known as Prince.
Well, he came back to the name Prince in the end and to this amazing music. That's Prince, who's died aged 57. Thank you very much to Paul Gambaccini for joining us. Now, Ray Fitzwalter was the legendary editor of the celebrated ITV current affairs programme World in Action. Under Ray's leadership, the team of journalists at Granada Television in Manchester revealed the corrupt dealings of the Yorkshire architect John Paulson and showed that the Birmingham Six had been wrongly convicted of carrying out pub bombings. After leaving Granada, Ray ran his own production company and chaired the campaign for quality television. We spoke to two of Ray's former colleagues on World in Action, Roger Cork and Ian McBride, who produced two of the films about the Birmingham Six.
He was willfully eccentric, joyfully mischievous, deadly serious in his approach to the work, and completely and utterly beyond reproach, a man of complete journalistic integrity.
I remember very vividly my first day at work. On the right-hand side of the door, in a frame, was a libel writ. And the libel writ said, in the High Court of Justice, the Right Honourable Reginald Maudling MP against Granada Television and Ray Fitzwalter. And I knew I had arrived in a place where the powerful could expect absolutely no quarter given.
These are the faces of the men convicted of Britain's worst ever terrorist attack, the Birmingham pub bombings in 1974, in which 21 people died.
The most important thing about the Birmingham Six and Raymond to remember is this, that if it weren't for Ray Fitzwalter, the Birmingham Six would die in jail. That's the simple truth of it. What happened was that Chris Mullin, the MP, became an MP, was a very old friend of Raymond's, and he actually became interested in the story, and he bent Raymond's ear relentlessly.
He came to me and I refused to touch it.
Ray is a very cautious man, and that's one of the reasons why World in Action was so successful. He was brave and bold and would go where no one else trod, but he did want to be convinced first.
I think Mullin had two goals at me that I didn't want to take up. And I said to him, what we've got here is an 11-year-old story about the most unpopular subject I could possibly imagine. And there's no evidence there. And he said there was, and I said, that's not evidence.
But Raymond actually listened patiently and tested what Mullin had already established. And he decided that he would persuade Granada, he'd persuade a commercial broadcasting organisation, to spend what turned out to be 7 years and, what, I don't know, £1 million, £1.5 million?
For 16 and a half years, we've been playing used as political scapegoats!
We eventually moved as a result of all the really extended research that we did and the groping around that we did. We were led to believe and understand that, in fact, these men, it wasn't just an unsafe conviction. They were innocent. They didn't do it. And we established along the way who did.
Justice! I don't think them people in there have got the intelligence nor the honesty to spell the word. Never mind, dispense it!
World in Action will always be remembered for the big investigations. But Ray had an expression, which was that programmes should touch a raw nerve. In 1984, when a very young Conservative MP called Matthew Paris was invited to live on the dole for a week. And then a few years later, another programme was made, which was a spoof game show, which was hosted by Nicholas Parsons and was designed to show that basically if you were a better off person, a middle class person, even though you might pay more tax, you also got loads more money in the end out of the state because you send your kids to university and so on and so forth. And that was called Sponges.
What sort of a character was he when you were working with him?
You would expect him to be a big, brash figure. He wasn't like that at all. He was very quiet, very unassuming. And he came from Bury in Manchester, and he spoke with a Bury accent.
A great deal of current affairs is not terribly glamorous. A great deal of very, very good work is done in public libraries.
He was never a kind of touchstone of popular culture or anything like that. Very rarely did Raymond go to the Granada Bar. And one summer evening, he falls into the Granada Bar with a group of us. And we're joined by Anne Kirkbride, who was Deirdre in Coronation Street, you'll remember. And Raymond is sitting there sipping some non-alcoholic drinks. He barely drank. And he turns to her and he said, and what do you do? And she said, I'm a bit of an actress, Chuck. And he blinked and said, oh, he said, are you in anything?
Do you think that he was upset later in his life that ITV moved away from the kind of programmes that he made his name producing?
I think he was very upset about it. Although it was commercial television, Granada Television had a reputation of making programmes that mattered.
He was genuinely fearless. When Raymond's face paled or his lips tightened, it didn't mean he was worried about anything. It meant he was digging in, he was starting for the fight, he was enjoying it. And his kind of sheer courage in the face of some of the most unpromising and difficult challenges was inspiring.
That was Ian McBride on Ray Fitzwalter, who's died aged 72. Now, Victoria Wood's comedy made millions laugh, but her poignant performances as an actress could also make them cry. When news of her death was announced, people up and down the land felt they'd lost a friend. Victoria Wood was born in Bury in Lancashire and drew on her northern roots in her writing. She started out performing funny songs at the piano, but then became a stand-up comedian, screenwriter and playwright, and an award-winning actress. We've heard tributes from many show business contemporaries who admired Victoria, but she was also an inspiration to younger women performers, including Vicky Stone, who appeared in her play Talent.
I wanted to be a funny girl that also played and sang. Before her, there wasn't anybody else doing it. Victoria Wood gave me permission.
Hello. No, it's all right, you don't have to shout hello back. It's not Dick Whittington.
I spent a bit of time kind of researching the history of women being funny. It started in the music hall. So pretty much always one of the comic turns in music hall was a funny woman singing a quite kind of bawdy or innuendo-filled song. And interestingly, Mary Lloyd was christened Mary Lloyd Victoria Wood. A fact that completely blows my mind.
I've had it up to here with blokes and all their stupid, dirty jokes. It's not a lot of fun to hear the one about the nun, the marrow, the banana and John Noakes.
From the age of five, I lived in a massive bungalow on the top of a hill on the moors on the Rossendale Valley, a house that had been an anti-aircraft base that my mother had partitioned at random by dragging bits of plywood off bomb sites and lashing them to the top of a minivan and driving them home and making rooms out of them. So it had lots and lots of rooms, which meant we could all be, there were four of us, four children, we could all have separate rooms, which is perhaps my mother's intention, I don't know. But after a certain point, we never really sat around the table. I had a room that had a piano in and a television and books, which is really all I needed. And, you know, I used to bring food in and that was it. And we were just all on our own.
There's so much to tell you, I don't know where to start.
She said that growing up, she had a low opinion of herself, partly because she was fat and she was always jealous of thin people.
I'm just a simple northern boy, I'm sure.
I was always obsessing about fat and weight, food. Could I have this? Could I not have that? I mean, it went on for, I still have it now. It doesn't ever go away, but it's not as bad now.
She thought that seemingly shy people have the ability to connect with a group rather than one-on-one. The first time we met, she slid a card under my dressing room door and ran away. And I had to chase her down the street to talk to her.
I was sort of envious of all these groups of people that were in a group. You know, there was a horsey group and the girls that went out with boys and there were the clever ones. And I did a lot of observing. I mean, the good thing about being isolated is you get a really good look at what goes on.
Interestingly, the music, and I think this is true of all the music that she writes, is it's the influence from jazz. You'd assume that maybe it would come from a kind of more musical theatre background, which is what a lot of comedy songwriting does. In Let's Do It, for instance, not only has she got more internal rhymes than Cole Porter, in there are four key changes. So it's got a real slow feel at the top. And then she sets the scene of Frieda and Barry. Frieda and Barry sat one night. The sky was clear, the stars so bright. She sets the scene. And then, you know, she kind of pulls it when we get to the point where... And Frieda grabbed his tie and said... Let's do it. Let's do it. And then it kind of really picks up the tempo. This is where the jazz influence comes in. So I'm sitting here playing it and I'm bouncing off the stool because there is no other way to play this kind of music. So, you know, we're up a key. We're in G major. Just when you think it can't happen again, we go up again. I can do it. I can do it. We're there. Another set of blistering lyrics. So we're up. We're in A major. This is now the third key change before we finally get to... Let's do it, let's do it, I really want to run amok. So we're in our final key, and this is where we get... let's do it, I really want to rant and rave. Let's go, cause I know just how I want you to behave. Not bleakly, not meekly, beat me on the bottom with a woman's weekly. Let's do it tonight. It still stands up now as one of the great comedy songs. It really is. It's completely timeless. It's, you know, it's a song on a topic that will never age.
Vicky Stone paying tribute to Victoria Wood, who's died aged 62. Now, in 1959, when I was 2.5 years old, I had a traumatic experience. I had to go into hospital for a minor hernia operation. On the steps of the building, a nurse snatched me away from my mother and told her she could go no further. I was distraught and only stopped crying when the anaesthetic took hold. It was experiences like these that Nurse June Jolly wanted to change. She pioneered a transformation on children's wards and wrote a handbook to inspire others to follow. Working at St Thomas's and then Brooks Hospital in London, June drew on her experience as a child social worker. Sue Burr is a former nurse advisor for children at the Royal College of Nursing. She worked alongside June Jolly.
If you've ever been in hospital, you'll recognise the symptoms. Yes, Jane's been got ready for...
When June started training, life was very different for children in hospital. Many children's wards restricted visiting, even for parents, to maybe an hour a day, and children were kept in bed. They stayed in hospital much longer.
At most hospitals in the country, visitors are allowed twice a week, but in the children's surgical ward at Nottingham Hospital, they're far luckier. You see, in this ward, parents are allowed every evening.
June was a champion of not only having free visiting for parents and mothers of younger children staying there, but they became part of the ward team instead of being shut out.
I think she was horrified when she came into nursing, having been a child social worker and seeing really a new form of deprivation from her point of view.
June's niece, Margaretta Jolly.
She used to say, yes, children are cared for physically better than they ever have been, but emotionally, spiritually, it was absolute desert. And that was the whole sort of impetus behind her wish to bring in play and fun and games and, I suppose, a kind of child psychology to her work.
You see, I approached it from such a different point of view, and I felt very sorry for the nurses because it wasn't their fault they didn't know. They said goodbye to the mother at the door. They took the child's clothes off, put her in something that didn't belong to her. She looked awful, sat her in a cot, and that was it. They didn't really even play until they were better.
She had something called a ward granny scheme. Now, this was really, they weren't the children's grandparents. They were for the children whose parents weren't able to visit very regularly.
A worthwhile experiment is being carried out at Brook Hospital in London, which Miss June Jolly of the paediatric unit reported.
We have in fact got one ward granny. We started this a couple of months ago and she has in fact been a granny to several children now, all of whom appear to have very much benefited from it.
What's happening to Anne all this time? She's not forgotten. Though Mummy and Daddy are too far away to see her each night, she's not allowed to feel neglected. That's where the art of nursing comes in.
She felt that rocking horses, Wendy houses, which could be made into sort of little hospital houses, she'd say they were the must for any children's ward.
So the children used to play at hospitals within the Wendy house?
Exactly. She'd had a theory about how this would allow children to re-find privacy that they needed, to act out fears. She brought a baby elephant onto the ward.
A baby elephant?
Yes.
A real one?
Yes. She'd been thinking what to do at Christmas for these children. So I think she contacted London Zoo, who said, unsurprisingly, well, we don't lend out our animals. But she then got in touch with an animal trainer who said, yes, I can provide a baby elephant and a baby lion. So all I know is that this elephant was taken onto the ward.
But not the lion?
And the lion.
And the lion.
Yes.
Were there those who criticised her?
She said that everybody resisted her. They would think that play did not matter. Her ideas, these things were not important. Probably thought it was disruptive, too expensive. You know, we couldn't...
Especially if you lost a lioness in the ward or something like that, then that could be a bit dangerous, couldn't it?
Even after I'd been in charge, I still had to fight theatres, anaesthetists, surgeons, matrons. They didn't believe that this mattered. They were doing a good job. The children got better. Everything was very clean and tidy. What does that mean to a child whose mummy's gone and left him?
She was a real role model as a woman who was not married, in fact, had chosen not to have children herself, but yet was...
Did she explain why?
She did say she didn't want to because she couldn't bear to have a henpecked husband about the place. That was her explanation. And I think, really, she was, she didn't call herself a feminist, but she was just a very strong woman who was always a rock for us and for me was a real role model as a woman who made her own way, who had her sense of vocation.
When June set about doing something, she was determined to change things. And today, when you see, you know, the atmosphere in the wards now, June was at the beginning of that change and was a champion of it.
Sue Burr on June Jolly, who's died aged 87. Now, if you've ever travelled by rail or on the London Underground, you'll know Phil Sayer, who's died aged 62. Phil was the voice of the Mind the Gap announcements on the Tube and the platform directions and apologies for delay on the Overground. While Phil supplied the male voice, his wife Eleanor made the female announcements, and they were all recorded in the studio at their home in Bolton. Phil explained how he got the job.
I'd done 10 years at the BBC in Manchester, and that came to an end. And I thought, well, what do I do now? And the answer was, voiceovers.
Stand well away from the edge of platform one. The approaching train is not scheduled to stop at this station.
Somebody approached us to do the Tube announcements. They were looking for somebody to make those. And after a fair amount of to-ing and fro-ing and tests and what have you, we got the job. So he ended up being Overground and Underground.
Please mind the gap between the train and the platform.
At the beginning of Airplane, there are two tannoy announcements, a male and a female, who are arguing about, I think, where the car parks are or where you need to park or where you need to place your bags. We've always kind of laughed and thought it would be very, very similar to Airplane, that we were having an argument, you know, mind the gap. No, 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 don't mind the gap. No need to do that.
Mind the gap.
The next station is Northwick Park.
Mind the gap.
I think he was very clear. His diction was brilliant. He wasn't posh.
I was always told when I was first being trained by a chap who's still in the business, when you start to feel slightly ridiculous in yourself, you're probably just about getting it right.
A trolley service of drinks and light refreshments is available on this train. This train is on the 12 coaches.
He'd never stopped working. He worked right up until the day before he went in for this routine appointment. He had no wish to stop working. And he loved the fact that he could kind of tell people, oh yeah, by the way, I mind the gap.
Please mind the gap between the train and the platform.
Phil Sayer, who's died aged 62. This week you also heard last words on the nurse June Jolly, the editor Ray Fitzwalter, the rock star Prince, and the comedian Victoria Wood. And to end today's programme, we have a final tribute in song to Victoria from Vicky Stone.
She did it. She did it. She kept us laughing through the years. We relished it, and now we'll cherish it, laughing on through our tears. You will not leave us bleakly, you will not leave us meekly. You'll forever beat us on the bottom with your woman's weekly. She did it, she did it.
That was a download of Last Word from BBC Radio 4.